Now, we started turning in questions, and the questions that were turned in concern Matthew 24, and that's a critical chapter in the Bible. If you do not understand Matthew 24, let me back up. I learned how to study the Bible from studying Matthew 24. I think that's it. I used to think Matthew 24 was in many respects one of the most difficult passages in the Bible, and we talked last week, or the last time we studied, about that expression, what will be the sign of the end of the world? And everybody knows what that expression, the end of the world, means. Except that is not the question they ask. He'd said almost nothing about his second coming and almost nothing about the end of the world and the final judgment. It's just not in there. How on earth could they be saying, what will be the sign of your second coming? They didn't even understand his first coming, you understand? And so we've got to keep that in mind. And so the latter translations brought it out, and if you've got anything other than the King James Bible, you've got to, not the end of the world, but the end of the age. And that's what they're asking about. Not one stone of this temple will be left upon another. And what will be the sign when all these things come about? Now, if you read the parallel, not from Matthew 24, but from Mark 13 and Luke 21, you'll find out they don't even mention the end of the age. They showed him the stones in the temple, and he said, not one stone will be left upon another. And they said, when will these things be? What will be the sign when these things begin to happen? And so the signs in Luke 13 and in Mark 13 and in Luke 21, the signs over there are not signs of the second coming. They're signs, when will this thing be and what will be the signs when these things come to pass? Now here's a key thing, and we've talked about this, but let me emphasize it again. Mark chapter 13 says these signs were given to four individuals. And so if you look in Luke's account, more than 20 times Jesus uses the word you and your. If you understand pronouns and nouns, you understand that first person pronouns refer to myself or to ourself. It is we, I, me, and us. That's first person. Third person pronouns are he, she, it, they are them. I believe that's it. Are those, perhaps. Maybe those are the pronouns that are in the plural. And so we need to understand that. And so whenever that we get to this and Jesus says, you will hear of wars. The question is, you who? And it's interesting, Paul. You were in this class that I taught, I don't know, 5 years ago, and in the other classroom here. And every time we went through Matthew 24, and I would get to this, and I would say, you who, you who. And I must have said it 15 times in that class. Guess what Paul gave to me? A 12-can cartons of you who, and I'm not even sure what's inside those you who cans. Paul, I've kept that. I want you to know, if you want some five-year-old Yoo-Hoo, whatever is inside those cans. But every time I see it, I thought, man, somebody was listening. And so when you read Matthew 23, Matthew 24, Mark 13, or Luke 21, and you see the word you, just hear Dan say, Yoo-Hoo, when Jesus says, you will hear of wars. Yoo-Hoo. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, that's the answer. They were the ones who would hear of wars and rumors of wars and all of these things. And that says nothing about any other people hearing of that. That does not mean that others would not hear of it, but it does mean that those individuals who were there listening to his voice were individuals who would hear those. Now, those four individuals never heard of World War II. They never heard of World War I. They never heard of the American Civil War. They never heard of the War of 1812. They never heard of the War for Independence. They never heard of Vietnam. They never heard of Korea. They never heard of Russia. They never heard of the Iron Curtain. They never heard of Iran and Iraq. And they never heard of the Chinese. And so individuals trying to make money are making tons of money by writing books and saying, this is the one book that will explain all of this. Folks, this is the one book that will explain all of this. Not something some individual writes, and if he sells 100,000 copies of his book and he makes $13 per volume, he makes $10 per volume, he just made $1 million. All he's got to do is sell 100,000. And if he's a televangelist, he's got that big audience, he's already made $1 million on writing the one book. Except he doesn't just have volume one, he's got volume two and volume three because he likes that income. I think that's a part of it. And so as you read these verses, you need to understand that when he says, there will be wars, that is not what he says. It does not say, and they will hear of wars. It says, you will hear of wars. Now when you get to verse 14, it says, the gospel, Matthew 24, 14, the gospel will be preached in all the world. This gospel of the kingdom, this good news about the kingdom, will be preached in all the world, and then, I want you to understand that, then the end will come. In my Bible, I've circled that word end in verse 14 and circled the word end over in verse 3 and drawn a line. What will be the sign of the end? And he gives the signs and he says, you want to know when it's going to happen? It's going to happen when the gospel has been preached to all the world as a witness. Did that happen? Yes. Colossians chapter 1, verse 23, and that's a note that I would put in the margin of my Bible, says that in the first century, every creature under heaven had heard the gospel. Now, if Jesus said, when the gospel is preached in all the world, and Paul says, Colossians 1, 23, that it has happened, and Jesus says, when it does happen, the end will come, then Paul says, the end now can come, because when it is preached, then the end will come. End of what? The end of that age. Judaism had been there for 1,500 years. It was ordained by God. It was holy. It was a tremendous God-given, the only God-given religion on this earth. And so God, who gave it, foretold in a way that nobody could misunderstand, foretold that this temple was going to be destroyed, and gave the signs. Now, if you understood that and you heard this and you were looking at it, you would understand that it talked about something that was going to happen in that first century. Verse 34, and we'll get to that a little bit later today, says that all of these signs that were given in the first 33, 34 verses would happen in that generation. And a long time before I understood Matthew 24, I understood verse 34. When Jesus says, verily I say unto you, this generation will not pass away until all these things happen. Matthew 24, I believe that's 34. Some of you are frowning, but I believe that's where it is. Until all these things happen. When's it going to happen, Lord? When the gospel is preached in all the world, and it's going to happen in this generation. And that you cannot misunderstand that. I understood verse 34 a long time before I understood the things that we're going to look at. But let's get back and look at Matthew 24 again. Look at slide number 2, and that is, Jesus said, pray that your flight be not in the wintertime. What's going to happen? Well, he's already told them, Luke's account, when you see Jerusalem encompassed about with armies, then let those in the cities do not run into the city, but run out of the city. And so Jesus says to the apostles, pray that when that fleeing time comes, pray that your flight be not in the winter nor on the Sabbath day. Having lived in New Zealand nearly 10 years, I had an appreciation of this because while you may not be aware of it, but I have seen, a lot of cold days in June. That's an expression we have in America, right? Cold day in June or cold day in July, I forget what it is. In the southern hemisphere, the seasons are totally reversed. Summer months down there. That's January and February. That's the hottest time. When you get in the southern hemisphere, it's the hottest time on earth. Now you take this and make this universal and apply outside of the setting in which it was given. You take these things in Matthew 24 and you've got, pray that your flight be not in the wintertime. Are you aware that everybody in the northern hemisphere above the equators were praying, God, please don't let the tribulation come in January and February. And the people in the southern hemisphere at that very same moment would be praying, Lord, please let it happen in January or February. And so that in and of itself is just a geographical argumentation showing that these words are not universal. There's another way to know they're not universal when the Lord says, you pray that your flight be not in the wintertime. Now, what about the Sabbath day? And we did not cover this before. Some people would look at this and say, well, it's a Sabbath day's journey. Hello, they're not under Judaism anymore when all this happens. There was no binding of the Sabbath day's journey, which, by the way, is not mentioned in the Old Testament. It's a tradition the Jewish elders came up with about a certain distance you could travel on Saturday. And, well, why would you pray that your flight be not on the Sabbath day? If you'll look at the closing chapters of Nehemiah, you will find out that when they came back from Babylon in captivity, they were not observing the Sabbath, especially those nations and merchants that were from those nations. They were coming to Jerusalem on Saturday, and Saturday was like every other day of the week. You know how Nehemiah handled that? Nehemiah commanded that they lock the gates on the Sabbath day. That keeps there from being commerce. It also keeps there from being any exiting on the Sabbath day. And so that army is coming. You'll see Jerusalem encompassed about with armies, but you pray that when that happens, it's not Saturday. Why? You'd be locked inside the city. That's how swift it's going to be whenever they come. And he says, let those in Jerusalem, let them flee into the mountains. Let them get out of this troubled place. Now, I want you to look carefully at this verse. Pray that your flight be not in the winter time, nor on the Sabbath day, for then there will be great tribulation. Then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world unto this time, no, nor shall ever be. Before we look at some of these other slides, I want you to stop and hear what Jesus says. You pray that your flight be not in the wintertime, nor on the Sabbath day. You four men be praying that your flight be not in the wintertime, nor on the Sabbath day. It includes these individuals. And he says the reason you need to be praying that, look at the word for then there will be the great tribulation. Understand words? Do you understand the force of these words? You men need to be praying that your flight be not in the winter time, nor on the Sabbath day, because, and here's the reason, that will be the worst tribulation there has ever been or ever will be. The great tribulation. And I know those individuals sometimes referred to as premillennialists, those individuals, televangelists, talk about all the tribulations coming. The whole aspect, well, is the rapture going to be pre-tribulation, post-tribulation, or mid-tribulation? When people say that, I'm not sure what you're talking about because the word rapture is not found in the Bible. Isn't that amazing? If the word rapture is not found in the Bible, how can it be a Bible topic? every Bible thought, every religious concept you have, every single one of them, there are Bible words to describe it. Are there words to describe this table right that is behind me? Are there words to describe the elements that are on this table? Those are Bible concepts. What about what we're doing right now? And that is teaching and learning and searching the Scriptures. Are those Bible concepts? Yes. Every religious thing that happens has a Bible word to describe. Why? Because words are the expression of ideas. I have an idea in my head. Did I use this 2 weeks ago when I talked about this? I've used it recently, but I don't think it was in this setting. I have a Bible idea of a big gray elephant. Funny thing, he's got pink polka dots all over him. One of his tusks is blue. The other one is orange. He has 5 legs. For some reason, that tail has become a leg, and now he has 5 legs. I had an idea. Did you get it? How'd you get it? The words that I use. And every idea you have can be verbalized. Now, having said that, and if you buy into that, and I think it's true, it's just obvious, I think, by that illustration. By the way, what color were those polka dots? I just wonder if you were listening. You think, you remember that. You remember his tusk? Yeah, what color? Well, it depends on whether you're a Florida guy or an Auburn guy. But both of you, if you're from Florida, or if you're a Gator fan or you say War Eagle, when I said a blue and an orange, I know the way I would remember it. Must be an Auburn type, Auburn elephant. Oh, no. That's the Alabama that has real tusks. Okay, but that's another subject. Anyway, but you see, you got an idea. Now listen to this. If there are no Bible words to describe an idea, how can it be a Bible idea? Faith, repentance, confession, baptism, Lord's Supper, singing and making melody in your heart. The fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Everything we do inside this building is biblical, because we must do Bible things in Bible ways and use Bible words to describe those things and ways. And so when people talk about mid-tribulation, post-tribulation, pre-tribulation, I know the definition, because somebody says the tribulation is only going to last 7 years. I'd like to know where the Bible says that. I do know the Bible talks about the worst tribulation there was ever going to be, but that's not something that lies in the future. Why? Because Matthew 24 says, you pray, you 4 men, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, you pray that your flight be not the winter time nor on the Sabbath day, because then at that time will be the worst tribulation there has ever been. If you'd been there and it was Peter, Andrew, James, and John and you, what would you have understand Jesus trying to communicate? You, me, I, us, we need to be praying that whenever that time comes to flee that city, that is not on the winter time, not in the winter time, nor on the Sabbath day, because at that time will be the worst tribulation there has ever been or ever will be. Folks, that's not an interpretation. That's a quotation of what these words on the screen say. You read those words on the screen. While I amplified it slightly, I didn't say anything in my amplification that's not a part of every word there is on that screen. Now, the worst tribulation there's ever been. Look in the book of Revelation. And I don't want to spend too much time over here, But you and I need to understand the force of words in the book of Revelation. The book of Revelation, chapter 1, verse 1, there are four things about Revelation that are affirmed. It's a revelation. It's a revelation to seven churches in Asia. It's a revelation to seven churches in Asia in signs. It's a revelation to seven churches in Asia in signs of things that which must shortly happen. That's what this verse says. He sent and signified it. Rehyphenate the word signify. And in the Greek, it's even more obvious. He will signify it. Symbols and signs. And he says then in verse 3, the time is at hand. Now I want you to look down at verse 9. John, both your brother and companion in, look at this, your companion, I am your brother in the tribulation. What did he say? Not I will be, not I was, but in the tribulation. Right now, I am in that tribulation. Now, we've used Revelation 1:9 to say the kingdom existed because he said, I am your brother in the kingdom. And rightly so. The kingdom was there and the tribulation was there. And John says, I am right in the midst of this tribulation. Now then, look in Revelation chapter 7. The tribulation is mentioned again. And the question is, who are the 144,000 individuals, evidently Jewish individuals, as you look at the number, but the tribes they were from, Jewish individuals. And he says, after these things, in chapter 7, verse 9, I saw another multitude, a great multitude which no man could number, and they were from all of every nation and tongue under the earth. Then verse 13, one of the angels said, who are these arrayed in white robes and where do they come from? The messenger from heaven, one of the elders, asked John, John, who are these in the white robe? And John's answer says, you know, and implying, you tell me. He says, these in the white robe these are the ones who come, present tense, who are coming. Not those who will come, not those who have come, but we are in the tribulation, and these are those ones who come out of the great tribulation. What's the great tribulation? Well, if it's the great one, there's only one that's unique in that nature, the worst one there has ever been or will be. And that unlocks the key in many respects, but it's tied to Matthew 24. That's why I think it's important that you've got to understand that in the first century, there was the worst tribulation there has ever been. Now let's get back to Matthew 24. And let's talk about it. We looked at the background of those words. The temple was being destroyed. These signs for this were happening. Whose flight is it? To whom was this stated? Mark 13. They were to pray, for then there will be the great tribulation. Now look at the bottom of this screen. Now learn a parable from the fig tree. It is rather interesting. Sometimes people, that fig tree is the Jewish nation. It is interesting that either Mark or Luke doesn't say fig tree. He says the fig tree and all other trees. And so he's not just talking about, somebody says, talking about Israel, fig tree of Israel. How do you get that? When the parallel account said, and not just one kind of tree, it's true of every tree, but especially true of the fig tree. Here is an illustration that these four men would readily understand. He says, learn this from the fig tree. when its branch has already become tender and put forth leaves, you know that summer is near. Paul, you who? You four men. Is it summer yet? You've seen a robin pulling the worm out of the ground yet? Sign of spring? Here's a divine sign that summer is near because the trees start blooming. They put out their leaves, and you know that it is near. Now look at the application of this fig tree. It's a parable. Fig tree doesn't represent anything. It's an illustration. He says, so also when you see all these things. What are you going to see? You are going to see in your lifetime all of these things that are mentioned. And I understood that a long time before I understood Matthew 24. Because I know what these words say. I recognize what these words say. And so I've got to lock in, and I did when I was trying to figure out what Matthew 24 was. But when he says, so likewise when you see all these, know that is near at the door. Look at verse 24. Verily, truly, absolutely, most assuredly, I say unto you, this generation, Peter, Andrew, James, John, and you hear Jesus say, this generation will not pass away until all these things happen. And I've emphasized on the screen the word all these things. It's important to recognize and to realize that and to come to an understanding of it. Now let's get to the lesson. Go back to verse 29. What is going to happen after, after the tribulation? In verse 29, the words are on the screen, Matthew 24, 29. Immediately after the tribulation. You understand that? Yep. Something immediately after something else. Sounds rather quick, doesn't it? Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven and with power and great glory. And he'll send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And when I was growing up, and for the first 15, 20 years of my adult life, I knew that had to be the second coming of Jesus. How many sermons have you heard that says when Jesus comes back, the stars will fall out of heaven, the Son of Man will come into the clouds, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken, and the elect will be gathered? That's all I had ever heard. And it may be this is all you have ever heard. Now, because that was all I ever heard, and assumed this had to be the second coming, then in my mind I thought verse 34 really needs to be verse 28. If you move verse 34, all these things will happen in this generation, I move it up so it's in verse 28. And I thought, well, I got to do cut and paste to understand this. No, they didn't know cut and paste, and the Lord was not giving them the right to cut and paste. The Lord put verse 34 there to help us study the Bible. Now then, the point that I want to make here is there are the signs in the sun and the moon and in the stars. There are the signs of the Son of Man appears in heaven. There is the end, the earth is to mourn, for they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds together his elect. Now, I hope the printing of the slides, I don't know, Buzz, do we have that next slide up there? What's that say? Okay. He'll send forth his messengers, angelos, together the elect. Do you have another slide after that? Yes, okay, there they are. Those are the four things. Just transpose them up to the next slide. When I printed these out, I don't have my slides anymore. I know what needs to be there. Now, I want you to look and understand the key to understanding this. When we always think literally about these verses, why? Why do you think that's what's going to happen when Jesus comes back? Because all of your life and all of my life, that was what I was told, and every time I read this verse, I came with a preconceived idea, and I would get to verse 34, and I think that's the hardest verse in the Bible to understand. Verse 34 is not a hard verse to understand. You know what verse 34 says? All these things are going to happen in this generation. All of these things. Well, does that include verse 29, 30, and 31? Yes. Then there's no way to understand Matthew 24. And that's where people are, and that's where I was. Now, you understand it because of what you've heard. Look at the next sentence that is up there. The Jews would not think of this literally because of what they had heard. Are you aware that the Bible in the Old Testament repeatedly talks about the sun and the moon and the stars in a figurative way and applies it to the fall of all nations throughout the Old Testament? And never in the Old Testament is there a literal fulfilling of stars literally falling out of heaven, the sun being darkened and the moon not giving her light. It's never literal. They had not heard our televangelists. They had not heard the preaching that I heard growing up that made this such a difficult verse. All they had to explain about the sun and the moon and the stars falling out of heaven was the Old Testament. And every time in the Old Testament, no exception, every time you read about the sun and the moon and the stars and the heavens being shaken in the Old Testament, it is always figurative. Now, if what you have heard was always figurative, then you will understand it figurative. Why? That's what it means. If I tell you, man, yesterday was really a cloudy day for me, the roof fell in on me. Now, you've heard that both literal, but you've heard it so figuratively you thought, no, the roof didn't really fall on him. That's figurative. Here's one that you have never heard literal. He said this, and it's true, because he said he got it straight from the horse's mouth. What do you think? Never. Never. If you'd never heard it that way, literally, you would always think figurative. That's the amazing things with figurative language. What about this one? I was talking to him. You're not going to believe this. He swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. What? That expression has never been used literally. So when you hear the expression, he swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, what are you going to think? You don't think literally. I remember being in New Zealand, and it was a Cub Scout meeting or some organization my boy was in, and that Cub Master said, okay, boys, time to pull your socks up. You know what that means? They literally all reach down and pull their socks up. He means it's time to get ready to get started. Time to pull your socks up. Let's get started. They took it literally when the individual speaker meant it figuratively. It's time to cinch up your belt. What does that mean? I got a belt. Cinch up your belt is not that. What about gird up your loins? What's the difference in girding up your loins and cinching up your belt? We read gird up your loins, and we never think about girding, about cinching up the tie around your mid-waist. Now then, let me show you, and there's multitudes of examples, and if you want copies of these notes, let me know, and I will make you copies of them. We do not have time to look at all of these places in the Old Testament. I want to go to Isaiah chapter 13. Here is the classic example of stars falling out of heaven. Isaiah chapter 13 and verse 14 have to do with the fall of Babylon. How do I know that? Because verse 1 says, this verse is about the fall of Babylon. Now, he says, verse 17, I will stir up the Medes, Isaiah 13, 17, I will stir up the Medes against them who will not regard them, and as for gold, they will not delight of it. Their bows will dash the young men into pieces. Verse 19, and Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' prize, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Has that happened? Yes. When the Persian army came down, they wiped out the city so much that it would never be inhabited. Babylon is no more. Look at the figurative description of what happened when Babylon was destroyed. Look at this. Verse 9, the day of the Lord will come, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy the sinners from it. For the stars of the heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for the sins and the wickedness for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud, and will lay low the imaginations of the terrible. I'll make a mortal worth more than gold. Verse 13, I will shake the heavens. The earth will be moved out of its place in the wrath of the day of the Lord. I don't think the stars fell out of heaven. I think they're still up there, don't you? What if I tell you that throughout this, Isaiah 13, you make your notes, put Joel chapter 2. You've got exactly the same language in Joel chapter 2. Figuratively, stars falling out of heaven. Figuratively. All of these things happen. And when all of these things happen, it was a sign that the Son of Man was not in the tomb, that his body was not destroyed and captured by the apostles, taking his body and hidden it. When all of these prophecies were fulfilled, it was a sign that the Son of Man was not on the earth in an unmarked grave. Then shall appear, and in the Greek it makes no difference where phrases are found, shall appear in heaven. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. It's the Son of Man that's in heaven. What was the sign that the Son of Man is in heaven? It was the fulfillment of these prophecies. He'll send forth his angels. Greek word, angelos. Messengers applied to John the Baptist. Applied to those messengers that Jesus sent out. And when that Jewish city was destroyed, Christianity exploded. His messengers, because there was no longer persecution from the Jewish nation, he sent forth his messengers. When Paul went on his missionary journeys, he fought and fought in every place. But when those who were persecuting Paul are no more, when that Jewish nation is no more, The door is wide open for the Roman government allowed freedom of religion. It was the Jews who stirred up the Romans saying, shut down these Christians. The Roman government practiced freedom of religion, and when the Jews were destroyed, his angels went out. Well, what about him coming in the cloud? Isaiah chapter 19, verse 1, when Egypt was judged, it is described as the Lord coming on a cloud. And all the way through the book of Psalms, you will read verses about him coming on the cloud. Here's what you do. Take what I've said, write it on a card. Don't you believe a word of it. Put that card in the back of your head. And as you study the Bible, and every time you read in the Old Testament about a star falling out of heaven, literal or figurative, literal or figurative, these apostles never would have thought about stars out of heaven being a sign of stars falling out of heaven, but a time of great distress and turmoil. And did that happen? Absolutely. When? In that generation, when the gospel went out and the enemy that persecuted the gospel was no more, the gospel went out to the edge of the world and the saints were brought in. That's it. We'll take this up again sometime, but thank you so much, and thank you for whoever turned in this question about after the tribulation. Thank you.